Blog Talk Radio.
Tempered steel, glowing red, the bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationship, experiences, environment, genetics, all take hand in molding the immature adult we are today. That was a joke. Come on, we're on the air.
So welcome to the Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is poetry that we are made of.
I'm the Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey.
And I'm Aphasiana. We will be featuring poems from our contest on the website allpoetry.com. We are part of a group on the website called Late Night Poets. If you are in the group, you can follow along the chat to read the poems as we do for the full experience. However, you do not need to be in the group to contribute poems, call in, or listen.
Thank you, Fill My Eyes from Late Night Poets, and thank you, Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Dexter, for hosting with me, and to everyone who contributed poems or calls in. Your writing is what we are here for.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. I hope all is well out there in poetry land. To all of our listeners, late night poets, hopefully everybody is doing well here on this, I guess it's still spring evening, as everything is still, isn't it still spring, Faziana?
Yes.
Whatever, it's hot. It's getting warm, so whatever. At least the weather's warm. What an exciting time of year. I'd like to say congratulations to all of the graduates out there, all of the parents of graduates out there, the grandparents of graduates out there. It's an exciting time of hope in a lot of different ways. So I'd just like to say congratulations out there. This is a fantastic time of year. I just, you know, the spring and the fall is like what I love. And so that just explains a lot about me. I like falling in between. How are you, Afasiana?
I'm surviving. I'm having a bad brain week, so I keep saying the wrong words. So I apologize if I blurt out random things tonight.
Well, I've had a bad brain life. You know, I've said the wrong words to a lot of people for a long time. So
it is where my name comes from.
Yeah, there you go.
Summer is June 21st. So we have a while.
Oh, I'm way off. Wait a minute, you know, you don't know those kinds of things. You know, I do know graduations and things like that are coming up, so I guess maybe the important things, but, you know, it's whatever they say on the calendar year, whatever they made up is when it is. So, but it's perfect. So I'm excited tonight because we have a lot of fantastic poetry. We have a full board. Full from multiple different contests, and this is going to be a fantastic night of Double Helix. Why don't you explain some of the poetry that we have as far as the carryovers for your contest?
So the carryovers are from the contest of last show, which was A Word That Lives Inside, and it was based on the quote, "I didn't really know what that word meant, so I went home and looked it up. And then I got to know that word, and it began to live inside me. And that word was different because it was mine." So that's from Aristotle and Dante Dive Into the Waters of the World, which is by Benjamin Allier Sayans. And it just made me think about what words kind of stick with me. And so the contest was that people had to choose a word and either use that word or kind of get the spirit of the word in their poem. So our first entry is by Adrian. Let's take a look at that.
Okay.
"What's in a Name" by Adrian 41062. "What's in a name? Blame, shame, a flame. Words spoken with passion of 15 minutes of fame. Whether it be our Christian or be our middle or last, it's with us through life from first minutes of our past. Who can doubt these words? They belong to you alone. From those first baby cries, and it's by who we are known." End poem.
Great write, or great read, Afasiana. Great write, Adrian. It's something that I've thought a lot about this right makes me think that maybe other people have. I kind of have a funny name. Dexter Bailey's not my name. You know, I have kind of a longer name, kind of a funny name in real life. Well, I have Sam as my first name. My last name is a German name. But I've always kind of thought, like, what a weird name, or, like, how is this, and do I really feel like a Sam, or am I really a Sam? And it's something that I have thought about quite a bit, and I thought the poet, in just a brevity, brings all of these thoughts back up in myself. And maybe other people, too, as well, when it comes to a name. So, great write. Faziana, what did you think?
I found it interesting. To me, I've always thought the name tells you more about the parent than it necessarily does for the child. Because I work with kids,
yeah.
And often if I hear their name, I'm like, I can picture what your parents look like. I'm usually right.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, good point.
I thought that this was interesting, especially the second line, "Blame, shame, a flame." It's like your name connects you to other people with the same name. You know, if there's someone famous with your name, it connects to that. And then your name sticks with you, so it becomes something that is connected to your past. And it's interesting to think about that. And from being a baby until you're an adult, having this name be attached to you and it's yours. I actually personally find it interesting people's names they choose. Like, for example, the fact that you chose your screen name and what that means to you. And names you pick yourself, to me, say more about you than the name that you're born with. But this is really interesting commenting about how it sticks with us and it's connected to our past. And even if you change your name, that first name still kind of lives inside of you in some way. So, very interesting. Thank you, Adrian.
Great point. What do we have next here, Aphasia?
Next, we have one by Keith M. Drew. Can you read that one for us, please?
Absolutely. All right. And now that I got this new iPhone, it doesn't really refresh as good as my other ones, too. I always question whenever I get something new whether or not I like it or not, you know? Doesn't that happen to you?
I think you probably just aren't like comfortable with it yet. You'll learn it.
Seems like the newer stuff that I get, the worse it works, you know? Like, I don't know. I'm kind of a flip phone kind of guy. All right.
You're getting old.
I am getting old, but these things just don't work the way that they're supposed to. All right, here it is. Enough of that. Keith M. Drew. Our words, they fall the ground. My word is love, but can words explain it? Repeated sounds I always found make words we might and understand. But the language of the soul is from the times, not language found. An utterance from deep within, the feelings in that moment then repeated, same the sound. The sounds that make we understand. So in today, when words are not enough, in silence we do pray to ask a God, what comes of us? For languages so limited, even shouted and repeat. No one can truly understand the feelings that one feels. A million words they are written and growing more within each day. But no matter then how many words within all language we can't say, one only ever understands within oneself I found. So then I stop thy mouth from speaking, for all thy words will fall to the ground. End poem. This was a fantastic write. I feel like intellectual and written in a way, in formatting that, I guess you would say, or, you know, like almost archaic, but that has a negative connotation, which is also perfect for the poem itself. You know, what words to use, what words is this? This means this, that means that. But at one point, maybe it was just grunts and body language and things like this that maybe even express the way that one feels more so. Repeated sounds, you know, there's just a lot to take into on this poem. And the way that it was constructed and the way that it was done was brilliantly, because it was almost done in a way to make you feel like it was wrong, or like what, you know, like how does that sentence, or, you know, because it's just the way that we're taught words. that we're taught on how things should piece together. And, you know, it's just, I don't know why, I just thought that this was a very good rite. Faziana, what did you think?
I think love was a good word to choose as one that sticks inside you and as one that's hard to express. I mean, people say love in so many different contexts, and there's a big difference between, like, I love my new phone and I love my husband, or I love my dog, or, like, any kind of love. There's so many different ways that word can be interpreted, and so if he has that word deep inside, it means a certain thing to him that it might mean differently to other people. So I think this works really well with the contest. And the inability of language to capture feelings like that, even for people who are obsessed with language, like us poets, is true. Like, there's some things that you just cannot fully express with words. So I liked an utterance from deep within, because it's like it's deep, a part of you that you're trying to express. And then at the end, so then stop thy mouth from speaking, for all thy words will fall to the ground. And that's certainly how I've felt this week when I keep saying the wrong thing. it's all falling to the ground. Nobody knows what the heck I'm saying. I thought that had some real truth to it.
Great comment. And where do you think we should head to next?
I'm going to read Cataclysm by Sidney Pierce. Within these walls, there is a cataclysm. It feeds on and erodes the muscles that keep grins stretching and kind eyes seeing. It spits out splintered bones that dig deep into pink, soft flesh. Nothing survives here. Nothing makes it out alive. The cataclysmic meltdown consumes like a hungry pig at a trough. The body is at war with itself, and there will be no white flag waved. End poem.
Great read of Faziana. And I don't know. I felt that this poem was just highly erotic for some reason. I'm wrong, but I feel like it was a very interesting take on the word, cataclysm. You know, it definitely is a very lot of seems like it's sexual innuendos. Throughout, I thought it was just a spectacular rite for brevity. What did you think, Faziana?
I didn't see anything sexual at all, but now I'm trying to see it in that light. I thought of it more as like the body at war with itself, like an autoimmune thing where it's fighting itself, or like where you just like, I don't know, because maybe it's because I'm sick, but like nothing survives here.
It
spits out splintered bones.
Sick. I read that entire poem is that this was a whole erotic piece. I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh. I think that's fantastic. Continue commenting.
Just splintered bones. I mean, like, I guess bone you could take a certain way, but like splintered bones, I don't know. That's not very sexy to me. So I don't think that's how
yeah,
she meant
right.
it, but I could be totally wrong. So I'm really curious now. It's like, which one of us is
within
the
these
one?
Walls there's a cataclysm. It feeds in on and erodes the muscles. It keeps grins stretching and kind eyes seeing. Splintered
All
bones
right.
to dig deep into pink, soft flesh.
Okay.
Nothing.
Okay. I see where you're going. I just did not interpret it that way, but very interesting. All right, Sydney, tell us what it's really about. cool. Okay. I love how we see it completely differently.
Well, I think you're probably right, and you're probably not sick. I'm probably sick. But anyway, fantastic read and great write, Sydney.
I like Pam's comment. Dexter's pickup line, "Hey, baby, I want to taste you like a hungry pig tastes a trout." Pam, welcome to the show.
It's never worked before, but I can't rule it out.
Pam, is that you lurking? Oh, I didn't pull her on. Sorry. Pam, is that you with us?
Okay. Yes, it is. Yes. And hello, Daisyana. Hey, Dexter. Good to hear you both. And there you go, Dexter. I just gave you a future pickup line.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, tell us how that goes.
We're like polar opposites, and I think that only Pam could speak any justice into this.
Yes, Pam. How did you read Sydney's poem?
Well, I always think of a cataclysm as an act of violence. I have to admit, I did not see it as sensual, but I do see how the phrase, soft pink flesh, could definitely come across and, as a sensual one. Let's see here. Wonderful brevity, great imagery. The cataclysmic meltdown consumes like a hungry pig at a trough. This body is at war with itself, and there will be no white flag waved. It's interesting how the idea of a body being at war with itself, that inner struggle that, what's interesting about that line is that could work well with your addiction theme as well as the, word theme. But it definitely is a thought-provoking write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
I like that point.
And I'm very – oh, sorry. Go ahead, Paige. Yeah.
I was just agreeing with her that it works for addiction. If, part of you wants to be healing and part of you is craving something, your body is working against itself. I think that's a really great comment.
Great point. I was just going to say, Pam, I'm just very grateful that you could join us here tonight. So glad to have you on.
I'm happy to be here.
I'm going to put you to work, Pam. Yep. I'm going to get you to read Collapse poem, please.
Ooh, perfect.
I would be happy to. All right. Horvacu by Collapse. Horvacu, an expression that I didn't need to look up the first time I encountered it. Just the first word gave me enough goosebumps, the back of my head tingling, hair bristling. The second word fills me with ennui, all that empty space that invites me to fill, spill, pouring out all that angst inside of me. So thoughts, filigreed, curl themselves along, invisible lines, an arabesque floral script etched with an ancient Venetian glass quill, scratching onion-skinned verses just to soothe my mottled soul, blurring its sharp contours with the smudges of my fingers, rubbing balm with imagery converted to words. As much as nature hates an empty space, my mind needs space to unclutter itself, spilling into my living space. End poem.
Awesome read, Pam, and incredible write, Collapse. Let's go with Faziana. What did you think about this verse?
I loved it. I actually gave it gold in this contest. I like how she described her reaction to each of the words separately. I thought she expressed it so beautifully. Thoughts filigreed. It's just such a great way to say it. And I was not familiar with Horvacu, so I had to look it up. And I find it fascinating, and it really resonates with me. that fear of blankness, of emptiness. I tend to have like panic attacks if I see like blank white walls. I don't know. I just, something about the emptiness freaks me out. So I was like, oh my gosh, I never had a word for that, but horror vacui. And then just the way that she talks about it, with each word having such strong meanings, and when you put it together, it's just a whole new layer. And then I continued to look it up, and there's this whole art movement where they fill up every, like, inch of the painting because they want to make sure there's no empty space because of this horror vacui. I also really liked the way she talks about the how she uses writing as her art form, the scratching onion-skinned verses, soothing herself, and the rubbing the balm of imagery converted into words. I think she kind of plays on the idea of the art style, because she's talking about the Venetian glass and the quilt, like the all of the things that would go into the art style of horror vacui, and instead she puts it into her writing. The end, I think, was my favorite. My mind needs space to unclutter itself, spilling into my living space. I find this whole thing to be wonderful and unique. It's not like anything that I've read on here, and I just loved it.
Great comment, Afasiana. And Pam, what did you think of it?
This was definitely a well-deserved gold. Great choice, Afasiana. Yeah, I like that she went with a word that I had never heard of before, and that she did, you know, pick apart each part of the word. Wonderful imagery throughout, you know, an excellent write on the idea of being afraid of those empty spaces. You know, I don't think, I'm not afraid of empty spaces. I just think it's completely, like, why would people have empty spaces? Like, you know, I told my doctor the other day, I said, you know, you have the most boring waiting room. There's like hardly any pictures in there. There's empty space, but you know, it's, yeah, I like how she used the invisible lines in arabesque floral script etched with an ancient Venetian glass quill. Such elegant use of language there. And the idea in the end line, to unclutter itself, spilling into my living space, the idea of helping your mind to become free of everything that clutters it up, of everything that clutters up your life by spilling out those words. So beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah, I thought this was just a stunning write. Really, like you said, the informative part of it, mixed with the expression of it, even goosebumps on the back of my head, tingling, hair bristling. Right there, it's filling the space even between the back of her head. You know, there's spaces almost in our body and in our lives that maybe are without texture, or without thought, that even the words are filling them with different sensations. And she covers that in this right. His nature hates an empty space. You look at a vine, or there's old homes that were built like around, like in Vietnam and things like this, that were like kind of off in the jungle that were kind of kept. And now the jungle is just so overtaken. It. Nature hates an empty space. Just a fantastic write all the way through. So very well done, Colab. What do we have next, Fiziana?
We have one by Mark Loopy. Will you read that, please, Dexter?
Absolutely. It's coming up as deleted right now.
Looks like he did delete it. That's too bad. Okay, so I have another one for you then. Here we go. This is Brundaban Panda.
Okay. See, this is this new. All right, this is Brundaban Panda. Words hidden within the word heart. A word that lives within heart. Almighty Lord, as he of heart. Adding art with he, we see heart. Art, tear, here, he, he, are, here, he, her, heat. At, ha, rat, hate, tar, eat, ear, hat, rate. At heart, the seat of omnipresent. Heart, actual almighty he, applying almighty art, life be free. Almighty at art, heart, or almighty at heart, we love peace. Also at heart, we see kindness see. Heart holds Lord and soul and mind. Heart's God guides through mind. Humanity is highly necessity in life. Husband and wife in happiest life. Having harmony, home be heaven. Hate hurts hearts, so love's role remain, or hope's role main. End poem. Great, right, Brundaban Panda. Let's go with Pam on first comment.
Yeah, I like the way, well, first of all, great read there, Dexter. I like the way he plays with words. It kind of reminds me of one of those word puzzles where they take a sentence or a word and you have to figure out how many other, like, words that you would, or sentences you would get from it, those kind of games.
And
so
those are very common right now, so great, right? Great point. You know, those are kind of the trend. I think that those are kind of the trend right now, I think.
They've been around for years, but I think they are particularly trending. And I tend to play them because I like words, but I think but I've never been really good at them. I just tend to miss the words within the words. But I really like how he plays with these words. He plays with the idea of everything that's within the heart, the representation of the various types of love. And so excellent right and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And I apologize for using the word trend. I know that that can be kind of a damning word almost in art or with poetry. But I think that there is a certain thing said to be said about kind of sticking with the times. And I loved the way that he played. I thought it was a very clever way, and I thought that it was a very perfect word to choose to play with all of these different words, to use the word heart, because maybe all of these things are within our heart. You know, with what's within our heart is a lot of different maybe contrasting things, maybe very volatile words, maybe up and down, things like this. So I thought he just kind of captured that because there is so many different words that are within our heart. And I just thought it was a very clever way of tackling that. So, Faziana, why don't you get last comment on this and bring us to the next one.
Well, I like that he pointed out the art in the heart, because art is a good way to express what's in your heart. And a lot of times it seems like this poet writes about his spirituality. So to say that he is in the heart, meaning, his the God that he believes in, then that makes sense, too, as it being in the heart. I think heart is a good word choice for one that lives inside you. This is a good expression of that word that matters to him.
And could I just say this too? Thank you, Brenda Bon Panda. I know we give a lot of shout out on this show, but he's somebody that has submitted quite a few times to different shows, and I just want to thank him for being so consistent over the time period. I just thought that he's done a very fantastic job, and I appreciate all of his every time that he pops up in our show.
He does write very consistently for us. That's true. That's the end of the carryovers. Dexter, can you explain the contest that you made for this week?
Absolutely. It's about just addiction. People were able to kind of write freely as to however they felt about addiction. It's kind of a broad-based, wide-range word. Many of us struggle with addiction. Many of us don't, and many of us struggle with a family member that has addiction. And they could have it very – I wanted to kind of leave it open to various different ways that we're – range of addictions, but ways that you can cover the topic so that it could be broad-based. It's a very important topic, I feel like, in today's day and age. And so I thought we got a lot of fantastic rights that are about that. So I'm looking forward to this. So however you want to start it.
All right. Well, since it's my turn to read, I guess I'll read mine. Addictions bystander.
Perfect.
Addiction wallpapers my workplace. It nods before their faces hit keyboards. It glazes eyes that ask directions. It whispers to steal things we offer free. It vomits in the stairwell. It cries behind a book. It unscrews every table until they collapse. It neglects to put sharps in the yellow box. It sets our garbage cans on fire. It has me administering naloxone in my sleep. But more importantly, it steals the lives of the people it possesses. When those uncomfortable moments stop, I realize we've lost another one, and I long for the garbage can fire that tells me he survived the night. End poem.
Awesome read, Faziana, and I loved this so much. And I just wanted to say your AN, and I know some of the backstory behind this, but I work in a public library and we serve many street-entrenched addicts who depend on one of the few public places that is free and welcoming. So you work in a library, and libraries, for whatever reason, have become kind of a safe haven or just a place where people have come that have nowhere else to go, and a lot of people. And so you're trained in on administering certain medications that help revive people that have overdosed and are dying. And so what a public service that you provide, and what a poem here that you also provide as being addicts bystander. This is just a incredible right. And just from a standpoint or from a perspective and a place, maybe not known or thought of by many. This is just a fantastic rite of Faziana. Thank you. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I think this is just absolutely amazing. I love that you repeat it over and over again after you use addiction in the first line, because it really just drives it home. And I never even thought about stuff like this, about you know, how a library, you know, would be a safe haven for the homeless, and that you would have to, like, do that. You know, it sets our garbage cans on fire. It has me administrating nalazine zone in my sleep, but more importantly, it steals the lives of the people it possesses. That is so true of addiction. I mean, it just, it does. It steals lives. And I think it just particularly just has a huge impact in those end lines. And I long for the garbage can fire that tells me he survived the night, to get to know people and to care about them and all that they're going through, and then to realize one day that they, you know, just don't show up, and you know what it is that, you know, most that kill them is just, you know, it's sad. It's a very emotive, very sad. And I like that you wrote it in that straightforward style that says this is what addiction does and this is what it does to people. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. And, yeah, you know, to not have the dumpster fire means that, yeah, they didn't survive. And it just shows how much you care, Faizian. I just love this piece.
Thanks.
And where would you like to head to next?
There's one by Daniel Deschino. So Pam, would you read that?
Absolutely. I Hide by Daniel Deschino. Kingdom of animals, gathering of gatherers, the hunted hunting the hunted, collectors constructing a cornucopia of coping collections. And the king in the kingdom, perspective's power as the slayer of senses, crowns kings for any who believe they are above the kingdom. Oh, my brethren animals, beware if you walk the earth. Do not think yourself above anything, even the ground that you will soon become. And fear with all the weapons you have, the demons within, the demons you have befriended to forget and deny. And smart they are, if you believe they do not exist. And for that lost soul knowing from a chemical burn in the gutter, just a reflection of you as like when the rainwater reveals just a mask you wear to differentiate. Do not think I claim sainthood for when the world that is smothers, the world of wishes I hide in the escapism, I have a labeled so ironically as life. And don't blame myself, and I don't blame myself, and I justify, and I bond with those alike, and I hide. And sometimes I emerge by safety or force, and then again I hide and home.
Great right, and great right, Daniel, and great read, Pam. Faizian, can we start with comments from you?
I really liked, and for that lost soul drowning from a chemical burn in the gutter, just a reflection of you, as like when the rainwater reveals just a mask that you wear to differentiate. I think that mask is an important part because it's like people put on this who they are when they are on the streets or when they are living with addiction. It's like you try not to be yourself. You put on this new kind of persona out of need. You have to be tougher or like there's just different roles that you have to play in order to survive. And then also the drugs can mask your pain. It's a way to deal with things and by not dealing with things that are inside of you. And then he gets on to say, and he's talking about escapism, and usually addiction has roots in mental health or abuse or, you know, it doesn't just come out of nowhere. Most people who are addicts, don't do it for fun. They do it out of what feels like necessity to them. And then it becomes like that because your body becomes dependent on it. But I like that he recognizes that that there is a root there, that they're trying to escape something. Where is it now? I like that he also says that that he does not claim sainthood. It's not like he is above all of this necessarily. And then again, I hide, and people hide through addiction, no matter what the addiction is. I mean, it can be anything. For me, it's food. I hide my emotions, I eat away the sadness, which doesn't really work, of course. But I feel like no matter what your addiction is, you end up trying to hide from your own feelings. So I thought this was a great, suitable title, I hide, for this theme.
Great comment, Afasiana. Yeah, I agree. The whole piece of hiding, and then to talk about the King of the Kingdom, perspective's power as the slayer of senses, to slay your senses, you know, to no longer feel what you're feeling, and to befriend this demon within you. Do not think I claim sainthood. I think it's an important line that you pointed out also, because just a saying, or there is a comment, or there is somebody that said, people don't realize how far they are from being homeless. And I think that that comment is very similar, or could go almost hand in hand with, people don't really think, or people don't realize how close they are to being an addict, right? Because we're all almost addicts of our, either, even if you're not an addict addicted to maybe drugs, you might be an addict addicted to your schedule or whatever it is. But just how much that's within you that feels that what feels right can be shifted in an instant. And so I don't know, he just covers a lot within this, and I thought it was fantastic. Pam, did you get a chance to comment on this?
No, not yet, but I really like what both you and Afasiana had to say. I thought this was just a powerful write all the way through. I like how he reminds us that we shouldn't look down on other people because of what they're going through. And I like, Dexter, where you paraphrased that one quote and applied it to addiction, that, you know, then it's true. You don't know how close you are to becoming an addict, you know. And I did like the mention of the masks and the demons you have befriended to forget and deny, and smart they are if you believe they do not exist. You know, if you can convince yourself that you're perfect and you have no flaws and no struggles, then basically the demons, the struggles, the dark parts of yourself have won. And I like how, and I like the use of the word escapism. I hide in the escapism I have labeled so ironically as life. And, you know, to me, that's that idea of somebody who keeps themselves so busy that they don't have time to, you know, focus on their flaws, what they need to improve, what they need to change, because they're too busy trying to change other people. So wonderful write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah, very thought-provoking write to start off the contest. It's going to be a fantastic evening, I think, of all, a lot of that. Faziana, where are we heading to next?
Now, wait, who just read that? Was that Pam? I'm losing
so.
Yeah. Okay, so Dexter, can you please read the one by Tony?
Absolutely. This is Tony Scales. This is called Meth, A Love Story, Part 2. I sit. My heart beats furiously. I ache for it. I ache to feel good. I feel so empty, so worthless. I want that burning, sweet burning feeling of being alive. The craving is so bad, I can taste it in my mouth. To feel all those feelings that I can't seem to feel normally. Feel happy, confident. My fingers tingling in delight. I'm 8 months clean. Are the neighbors who'd have it? I have no money, no connections. I could drive to the hotel across the street. They say it's rampant there. I can't stop thinking about it. I can barely breathe. It lights up the sky of my soul. My heart turns white and innocent and pure. Everything makes sense when I feel it in my blood. But it's not coming tonight. Hot tears slip down my face. I look up at the ceiling. Mommy, why didn't you ever tell me about this? End poem. Faziana, why don't we start with you on comment?
I think this is really powerful. I like that it talks about how long it's been. I think 8 months. I've got to find this. 8 months clean. So even after 8 months, to feel this strong of a craving, that temptation to go back to that life, and the knowing where it's available, and the I can barely breathe part, I think is strong. The other part that I really liked was when she says, oh, where is, how does it word it? It's something about, like, my body doesn't know how to do it on its own anymore. To all those feelings that I can't seem to feel normally. So one of the things that we did at work was we had a talk with some ex-addicts about, you know, why they did the things they did, you know, to help create empathy for the people who we work with. And one of the things we learned from the nurse at that session was your body stops creating the natural hormones like serotonin where you can feel happy under normal circumstances, because once you start having the drugs, your body thinks, oh, you already have this, so I don't need to make it anymore. And even when you stop taking the drugs, your body doesn't remember how to make those things. So not being able to feel those feelings is not just like a personal failure. It is an actual physical thing that happens. Just like if we get if we have a lot of caffeine all the time, then we start to not have energy if we don't have caffeine. You get your body adapts to what you have. So I really liked that she put that out there, that she can't feel things normally, because that's something to think about, is not necessarily going for the high, but just going for trying to feel normal, because at a certain point, that's what they're trying to do. So I think this is a really informed piece.
Great comment, Faziana. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I can. I can tell Faziana has a lot of insight into this topic, and I have to say it's a great topic, because oh my goodness, it's just a lot of hard-hitting and emotive poetry. I like how this one touches on that idea that, you know, or writes about the idea of how even after so many months, after 8 months, you just still get that craving. And, oh, my goodness, that ending was particularly sad. I look up the ceiling, Mommy, why didn't you ever tell me about this? You know, it's so just a kind of a sad expression of wondering, you know, did her mom not communicate with her enough, or was it a generational thing where she learned to do drugs from her mom? Because, I know that oftentimes addictions can run in families. And so just a powerful rite and very well done.
I completely agree. And being a former addict, everything in this really resonates, because you dream about it for the first, like every night for the first month or two. You dream about it. You dream about doing it, and you smell it everywhere that you go. I mean, you can't even almost, and she did such a great job, because it's almost like you can't even put it into words how a wrapped around this thing can have you. And I completely related to everything that she had said in here. You know, the craving is so bad, I can taste it in my mouth. You just smell it everywhere. And how addiction comes on is it starts off as kind of your best friend, you know, happy, confident. This is somebody that was probably not very happy in life, not very confident in life. And the first time that they did it was the first time that they ever felt those feelings. My uncle had done meth before, and he said that was the first time that he did it was the single happiest and best moment he felt ever in his life. And so it draws in on that so hard. And I think she just captured that just perfectly. So, very well done. Where are we going next to, Aphasia?
Now we have one by Femora D. Soulweaver called Dancing with Emptiness. At first, just a nervous tick, a gentle burning itch beneath the skin. The thought of the rush makes me twitch with deep desire. A careful prick, magical, swirling mix, and flying high, like the bees inside, buzzing, dancing, wild and free, filled with uncaring. I dance with emptiness. The longer I linger, the deeper I need you. Need you flooding, scorched through my veins. In utter surrender, I do anything for more of you. End poem.
Great read, Aphasiana. Pam, can we start with you on comments?
Oh, wow. This is beautiful. Wonderful brevity. I like how she brings in here the sense of movement, the twitching, the flying high. Like the bees inside, buzzing, dancing, wild and free, filled with uncaring. I dance with emptiness. The longer I linger, the deeper I need you. And that's so, I love the personification here of the addiction, of the desire for what it is, ever it was that filled that emptiness at the time. And so excellent, right, and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. And thank you very much for submitting this, Soulweaver. Dancing with emptiness, at first just a nervous tick, a gentle burning itch beneath the skin. Obviously that to me feels like that of one of heroin. And obviously scorched through my veins, I surrender. In utter surrender, I'd do anything for more of you. I think that just captures it so well. Addiction and people. I don't know if people that have not dealt with things like that,
you know, it's when they say stay away from drugs, obviously it's stay away from drugs, but it's so hard to explain, and people go, well, could they do that? How could they be like this? Or, you know, it's cripplingly sad. And I think that she just captures it very well here also. Faziana, what did you think?
I like the detail of the itch and that feeling beneath the skin. It kind of like tears you apart. I've never done illegal drugs, but when I was coming off my brain surgery, I had to be taken off, like, because I was on morphine, I was on fentanyl, like prescribed fentanyl, I was on a whole bunch of strong things. And when they take you off of that, even though I was just taking it for medical reasons, oh, I just wanted to rip all of my skin off. It was just like crazy, the feeling of withdrawal. Just I had that, you can feel that burning in your veins.
Wow.
And you just want to like tear yourself apart. So,
wow.
I love the skin detail.
Wow, that's pretty intense, and you know, and that's what's sad with that side of the medication. Well, I guess that there's the other side too, which is meth and cocaine and stuff with the amount of Ritalin and things that have been prescribed. But a lot of these things have started off as prescriptions, you know, and to get that feeling. Very common to Faziana. What do we have next?
Now we have one by Pretty Bird. Pam, would you read that for us?
Absolutely. This is Tested Wrought Iron Perception by Pretty Bird, and it goes like this. Full plumage displayed in isolation, gas mask, galvanized truth, scarred and tattered. She watched him shred the legs he broke trying to keep her down, cold on the rack Inquisition style, where truth bleeds bones and lives torn asunder. But the answer was always the same. I love you. Questions clawed talons through flesh. This dark soul once danced in iridescence, basking in reciprocity that felt like forever wasn't a word. Music box yesterdays and steampunk mad scientist wet dream rapture questioned, but the answer was always the same. I love you. Fly, she willed, but iron cage, cruel incarnadine, spotted lies, chained will to shadows. Her body separated in time, languished in visions of a back receding. She was half an angel, exactly what he made of her, crying. But she answered, but the answer was always the same. I love you. And poem.
Great read, Pam. And it's always fantastic to hear from Pretty Bird. We don't hear from her very often. And I always love when we do. Faziana, could we start with you on comments?
I liked questions clawed talons through flesh. Again, with that scratching feeling. It seems like even though this is destructive, she still loves it. And that seems fitting for any kind of addiction where it's like it's an unhealthy relationship that you can't help but love this thing that's actually hurting you. So I thought that this was very fitting in kind of an abstract way. I think my favorite line was, but iron-caged cruer incarnadine spotted lies, chained will to shadows. I loved the chained will to shadows. It's very good. Pretty Bird is always really fantastic.
I agree. And Pam, what did you think of it?
Yeah, brilliant imagery and metaphors. I always enjoy and appreciate her writing. And, you know, I like how this talks about, you know, right, she writes about being held prisoner and continuing to love someone and or something, you know, and never being able to fully walk away from it. I particularly liked Fly, She Will, but Iron Cage, Cooler, Incarnadine, Spotted Lies, Chained, Will to Shadows. You know, there's within the life of an addict, there are so many lies they tell themselves and so many lies that they tell the people around them. You know, so just a powerful write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam.
I agree. Yeah, great comment there, Pam. And I agree, you know, Tasted Wrought Iron Perception. There's that taste that we have that lingers, you know, back in the back of the tongue and in the back of the throat. She watched him trying to keep her down. You know, there's this desire, there's this something highly sexual about or neurotic about the whole piece, but at the same time there's something that's just very dark and very terrible about the whole thing. And like Faziana said and both of you said, it just ties in so well with addiction. You know that this thing is breaking you and bringing you down, but you can't stay away. So it ties in very well. It might not be a substance abuse, but there's a few pieces that we're going to read tonight that are about addiction from the sexual nature. And I thought that this one captured it just perfectly. Very good. Very well, Pretty Vernon. Thank you for putting that on here, the board, this evening.
What do you think we should read next, Dexter?
I got one on here. So I'll post mine. And then I'll let you run with it. Okay, so hold on. I believe that this was from an old Pam contest.
Oh, yeah.
So hold on. It was such a beautiful picture. And it's called Our Secret Place, Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey. Take me with you to the dark forest. Hold my hand through the unknown. Nobody has ever loved us before. Share with me what isn't shown. Under your spell, I give to your curves, like smoke to your lips when a ring is blown. Pleasure found in a forbidden place, hands gripping gently on your throat. Deep in the your woods I drift, like pollen on a spring breeze drone, performing acts so shady. Leave me fiending for your cloud of smoke. Kill everything inside me. Inhale, inhaling, exhale. Your fumes take me home. End poem.
Great read. And I love those last three lines. Leave me fiending for your cloud of smoke. Kill everything inside me. Inhaling, exhale. Your fumes take me home. Like wanting it to kill everything inside you and feeling at home within those fumes. I think that's a really powerful ending. I mean, the whole piece is great, but I really love those last three lines. Pam, what did you think?
Thank you.
Yeah, I remember this contest, and I really thought this was just really a great write for that picture prompt. And it's interesting to me because, you know, both times I've seen this write and read it, I've thought of it as absolutely beautiful. But, you know, it's interesting when, you know, you have a write like this on a central show, you focus more on the sensuality, the idea of under your spell I give to your curves, and you see lines like curves and pleasure, and you think of the sensual angle. But then, you know, when you or you're on a show like this where it's about addiction, you see, or I should say, I see definitely more of that level, of, especially in those end lines, kill everything inside me, inhale and exhale, your fumes take me home. But even it, like up where you have, you know, under your spell, I give to your curves, up like smoke to your lips when a ring is blown, pleasure found in a forbidden place. It really just touches well on addiction and different types of addiction. I like that it's not very, you know, to me anyways, it's not very specified, although it does mention smoke. But it's kind of like that idea of just anything could be that temptation that draws you in and holds you, that holds you prisoner. Just a wonderful, multifaceted write and very well done.
Thank you,
I agree, Pam.
Yeah, it was covering it, and it's tough to even remember. Seeing it was 2 years old, it's kind of funny to you know, when you start bringing back rights. But yes, it was that woman, that picture. I remember those prompts. I don't know who, if that was a artist or what, but man, all of those paintings were just so striking. I just remember this always being one of my personal favorites. You know, it was kind of one of those ones that kind of goes under the wraps, but it was one of my personal favorites. So thank you, everybody.
I liked how layered it was, because it could be about a few different things. It was really well done.
Okay.
Where do you want to go?
So next. It looks like we have one by Simon Guest. So hold on. And Faziana, if I could get you to read that one.
Sure. Just One More by Simon Guest. Just one more hit. Just one more fix. I need, I want euphoria, pleasure. Stop remembering. Take me away. I need to get out of this rut, man. This hellhole. This place of decay and degradation. I just need one more hit. One more. Then I'll quit, man. I want out of this. I just... One more fix. I've begged, borrowed, stole anything to get out of this world. I need to get out. I'll do anything, man, anything to get out of this body, for that feeling of finally being free. Maybe this time I'll be free for good. End poem.
Great read of Faziana. Yeah, this write really captures addiction very well. You know, in an addict's mind, and her just how you just kind of work is, if I just had the money to get out of this hellhole, or whatever he says, kind of here, this rut. So in other words, maybe you apply and you get this job interview, but you're so down and you're so not yourself because you're coming off of drugs, I'll just do it to go to this job interview, or I'll do it to do this, to get back normal so that I can get back and then I can get out of this rut. And obviously, that's just a recipe for disaster. But it's just the way that addicts think, and I just feel like this is captured so well. And a lot of people don't survive that one more hit, you know. There's a lot of people that thought one more time. There's a lot of people in jail that are serving years in prison because they thought about this one more hit. And they went across town to pick it up and happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
So just this is very thought-provoking, right? Very well done by Simon Guest. Pam, what did you think?
I like the point you brought up about how one more hit can really change a person's life. It can mean death. It can mean jail because of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I really liked this first-person narrative and the middle stanza with, as you were mentioning, the excuses made and the reasons why eventually I'll quit. You know, and I like the raw honesty, and I begged, borrowed, stole anything to get out of this world. I need to get out. You know, the idea of anything that I can do to get to feed my addiction, to escape from my problems through my addiction. I thought those were just excellent lines and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Faziana, what did you think?
I thought it was really raw and real. That longing to stop remembering is, you know, a reason to get a fix. Anything to get out of this body. You know, if your body is in a lot of pain, whether it's because you're in withdrawals or whatever else is going on for you, that desire to just, like, not be you and to feel something outside of yourself. And that just, it makes so much sense with the cravings. But the thing is that really hits me is that last line is suicidal. This time I'll be free for good. You just want to not wake up from the bliss of the high. And even it's tagged at the bottom as about suicide, that wanting to let go and just, you know, disappear into that high. It's so sad and so common. And like you said, just one more hit can be really bad, whether it's intended to end things or not. It's definitely a possibility. I mean, that's why I'm trained in naloxone, because we've had, how many people? I've lost track of how many people have OD'd at my library in just this year. So many. Luckily, we've been able to revive them all. But, you know, no heart, no breathing. So there's this, whether it's on purpose or not, that one more hit can change everything. So I think that this is a really smart way to talk about it, as that telling yourself, it's just one more time, it's just one more time. And then the only time it's actually one more time is sometimes when it's actually the end. So it's really sad and a powerful piece. I like the way that he put it together.
And let me just point this out too, is that what's really relatable to this piece for me is, and this is a very sad excuse, but I remember continuing rolling, because I just refused to utter those words out loud because of how superstitious I was about the whole entire thing. So this is just a very, very, sometimes it's almost superstitious in your mind as an addict that, like, I can't even think about this being this my one last hit, because how far do you go with that, you know? So it's just a very, very good piece.
Agreed. And what do we have next?
Okay, next we have a piece by My Angel. And with that, could I get Pam to read that?
Of course. Completeness by My Angel 3. My broken parts cannot be easily put back together. I don't even know where to begin to glue back my pieces, making me whole again. I've been strong in a number of circumstances that should have broken me. Those situations only made me stronger. Yet loss after loss after loss after loss piled up. Four important, close-to-heart losses spanned out. I thought I was handling them okay, but the last couple tipped the balance. I broke into 1,000 puzzle pieces that are hard to mend. The girl was always strong, finally broke. Grief, loss, depression, seclusion, and mass combined were new to me, yet it was where I was now. Oh, I didn't want to be here, but I'm not used to not being strong and broken to boot. I felt weak because this was so foreign to me. I was trying each day just to make it through the day. Some days are better than others, but every day is a struggle to cope. I want to be mended, trust me. I don't like myself like this. I don't even recognize myself. I feel I'm hard to love presently, and it makes me feel even worse, even though deep down I know that's not true. So you see, I crave completeness. I am powerless over it. It's because life happened, and those events are not within my control. I take deep breaths and ride out the minutes, hours, days, and even months, and sometimes years, to satisfy this craving. If you find yourself loving a broken girl who was always the strong one, know her broken is deeper than usual. It'll take more time to help restore her pieces. With love, support, and your shoulder, she'll get there. Just be patient with her. Her wholeness is worth it. End poem.
Wow, I absolutely love this piece. But I'm going to let Feziana start with it.
I loved it too. I think that recognizing your previous strength sometimes makes being low and not being able to be who you think you should be even harder. You have very high expectations for yourself, and when you fail to live up to those expectations, because the world has just brought you down, so much grief and loss, and you know there's good excuses for not being your best self, but that failure can make you feel like you're not anything. I really liked the part that said, I don't even recognize myself, because I think that's very true in a lot of addicts and also just people who are going through a hard time. Is you become foreign to yourself. And I feel I'm hard to love presently. And that's one of those things where if people feel like they're not worth loving anymore, they isolate themselves, which makes the situation worse. They think they give up on being lovable because they feel unloved and unlovable. And so there's not as much to stop them from doing something extreme or whatever they need to do to get their drugs, for example, because they're like, well, nobody loves me anyway. I can't be better. I can't be a good person anymore, so I just need to go. And that's not to say that I think they're not a good person. It's just sometimes there's that attitude about it. So to not recognize yourself and to not know what to do with that foreign feeling of being weak. I like that she says that. This was this was so foreign to me because it's just like a whole new experience and you're just lost in it. I thought she worded this really well. It felt so authentic. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I have to agree. It did have an authentic feel to it. This is amazing. The whole idea of feeling like you once were this person who had it all together and kept it together through all the most difficult times. And it's interesting how it touches on the idea that sometimes when it comes to addiction, trauma can be the trigger, you know, that puts that into motion. And, you know, I did like that she mentions how, you know, when you're a person who has high expectations of yourself and you feel unlovable, you feel worthless, you'd hide yourself away, you know. And I like that she says, I want to be mended, trust me. You know, like the idea that, you know, this isn't the person I want to be, but for the time being, this is the person I am. This is just, it's beautiful, it's powerful, and it's very well done.
I completely agree. Dexter, you said you love it. Do you want to comment further?
Yes. This one, I took a few different ways, and after hearing other people comment on it, I took it more literal on the completeness. When I was initially reading it, I took it as somebody that was in love with an addict. And with everything that we have kind of spoken about, and, you know, yet loss after loss piled up, I understood that a little differently. I was thinking almost of deaths that were friends, family, boyfriends, things like this. But I feel like almost from a place of somebody that's in love with an addict, when somebody says that, you know, this is something that they feel at home, this is where they feel at love, how does that make the other person feel? But the actual thing that this is, that you guys pointed out, the completeness, is funny, or it's not funny, but it's something that I understand completely, is stability and things like this, you know, that are just like, God, I'd give anything for, and any little bit of bill that might throw you off, or anything that just comes up and you just toss your way, a flat tire, now you got to pay this, and you're chipping away at what you were saving, and things like this, it just hurts so much, because and other people might not recognize it, and people that maybe are more easygoing on things might go, well, it's just this, but you don't realize how hard somebody is striving for completeness, stability, things that just make sense and add up, and that they can make ends meet with it all. And so when little wrenches get thrown in those gears, it can just be devastating. And so I just enjoyed this write a lot. So fantastic write by my angel, and I thought it was very well done. Okay. Next one that we have is by J.M. Fredericks. And I will give this a read. It's called Sexually Motivated by J.M. Fredericks. I came back to a mahogany doorframe of the Molly Hill Motel every night from ages 14 and on. The man, the age of my birth father, greeted me with a toothy grin. My profile said 18. Nobody protested my soft face. It all went faster as a boy. Hunger filled his eyes like an oceanic whirlpool. Master manages me as I lose control of myself. I went to my knees without trouble. I wasn't to receive money or to request. He was a man, and I, a boy. I continue my undenying connection as we create music with augmented and minor keys. The choreograph of the motions emptied the bed. The same mahogany door is shut as he takes me back to my home. In a car smelling of his alcohol
and my shame. I sleep. A year passed. I still recall his words. You'll never get enough of me. End poem. Wow. Pam, what did you think about this?
Oh, my gosh. This is just, it's sad. It's tragic. It's kind of one of those that leaves me almost speechless. And it both speaks on how, you know, tragedy like sexual assault leads to addiction, but also speaks on sexual addiction. I think that's one of the worst things about abuse like that is when somebody takes advantage of a child, and where it says my profile said 18, nobody protested my soft face, it all went faster with a boy. And you got to wonder such a young age, it's 14, you know, because I knew people, you know, who from very young ages were addicted to substances. And you could imagine the tragedy of being addicted to drugs to the point of being willing to offer sexual favors. It kind of reminds me of the book that got turned into a movie, The Basketball Diaries, that had Leonardo DiCaprio in it. I don't know if you remember that book or the movie.
I can't think of it. Say the name again one more time.
The Basketball Diaries.
Oh, yeah, with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes, and that was actually a book, and the person who wrote the book, that was their life. And that's what this kind of reminds me of, is going through that kind of horror, that kind of tragedy. And when you should be, you know, playing with friends, instead, you know, you're dealing with offering up favors in return for keeping your the addiction in check. So powerful, right, that just really hits hard and very well done.
Well said, Pam. I thought this was a powerful piece. It's unsettling to hear about this boy who's taken advantage of by an older man, and it does seem like the man senses that the boy is not actually 18. I think that I saw the addiction as one where he likes the sex, but he's not proud of that. He craves it, but at the same time he feels bad about it. I like how it connected with the music, and this is what makes me think he actually enjoyed it rather than only doing it for the money or drugs. Because when he talks about them creating music, now I don't know music very well, but the augmented and minor keys, and then the choreography of the motions, it's like a dance. Now that could be taken two ways, because the choreography could be amazing and then it's like, wow, that worked out really well. Or it could be choreography because it's acting, because it's planning. It's going through the motions that you're supposed to go through. Choreography is dictated. So in that case, it could be, like you were saying, Pam, where he's only doing it because he needs something. And that reminds me of a book that I read called The Book of Life, My Book of Life by Angel, and it's about a young girl who becomes a prostitute, and it's because she meets this guy who gives her candy, in quotation marks, and she really thinks it's candy, but it's drugs, and then she gets addicted to it, and he'll only give it to her at first if she'll sleep with him, and then he ends up, you know, pimping her out to other people too. And it's just this, it's so sad to see young people taken advantage of like that. So this hits hard, and it's well done. Back to you, Dex.
Yeah, I thought this piece was very well done. You know, the way that I took the addiction part of it was for attention also. The man, the age of my birth father. So many times, like you said before, addiction replaces some sort of need or some void or some emptiness that we feel. And unfortunately, a lot of times where the father isn't involved maybe in a girl's life, or it can also go both ways, you know. It's still so wildly spread right now. And so, you know, maybe a huge issue as far as the problem in society is just where does the father, or where do dads, how important dads are in the lives and how shaping they are. You know, this master manages me as I lose control of myself. You know, it's so many times where it's just, I think that it's a craving of attention that was never received. And I think that that's what comes out so much as far as when children are out there looking for these things, they're looking for something that is not being acknowledged and acknowledged in a healthy way at home. And so this is just such a thought-provoking piece. It just is so sad. And I really appreciate, though, that he submitted this and was willing for us to read it. It's just perfect for the contest, and it's perfect for the Double Helix and what we do as far as on here about personal rights. I think it just this is supposed to be a platform where people are able to be comfortable to open up, and I thought that this was amazing. Okay, so next we have a piece by Weaver of Dreams, and Faziana, if I could get you to read that. And thank you for Weaver for being on the board this evening.
This is The Chase by Weaver of Dreams. I was addicted to the pursuit of love, more carnal than spiritual, I confess. A controlling mother, a distant father, let me be bitter, unable to love. A mess. My body was the currency that bought me the attention I craved, but on my terms. Fleeting through the transactions were I needed to be in somebody's arms. For years, the chase was all that mattered, to hold on to that serotonin-induced high. Not quite one-night stands, more 5 hours. I felt no shame because big girls don't cry. Then there was you. You blasted my world, blew it wide open. I felt as light as a feather. You promised you'd never hurt me or leave. 10 years on, still in love, still together. End poem. Sorry, when I read, I forget I'm leading the comments. Pam, can you start the comments, please?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, it's great to see Weaver on the board because, man, I got to tell you, if I was on vacation in Spain, y'all might not be seeing me on the board because I'd be finding other things to do. So, but, yeah, I like that this is one that goes into sexual addiction and not just the act of having sex, but the actual chase itself. Self, the excitement, almost like an addiction to the adrenaline high of chasing after someone. And then once you get them, it's like, not so much. But I like that she brings up a controlling mother, a distant father, left me bitter, unable to love, a mess. And, yeah, oftentimes when a parent is either controlling or distant, that can really have an effect on the psyche and on the ways that we seek out love. I also really like the lines, not quite one night stands, more 5 hours, I felt no shame because big girls don't cry. There's that whole idea of hiding your true emotions, you know, acting tough, acting like this is what you wanted. And I like that it has a happy ending, 10 years on, still in love and still together. That idea of finding, going through that life and then finding that someone to spend your life with, you know, just a really great write all the way through and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Dexter, what did you think?
Well, that was a great comment by Pam. And yes, I thought that this was a fantastic write. Being addicted to the pursuit, and I think that what goes hand in hand with the pursuit is the what if. It's almost like being addicted to the if, or the maybe, or the hope, or I could be wrong, but I feel like almost from a perspective of optimism. The next one, it could be great, or that this is going to be what it is. Because reality is that a lot of times that these different sexual endeavors almost end in, you know, disappointment in one way or another. But this idea of the chase and that this is, you know, and so I think that also bodes well with the idea of once they found the one that really fills this void, there's a realization and a recognition into the amount of disappointment that has gone into the chase and the amount of frustration that has gone in there and the self-awareness of all of the things that have gone, that have not lived up to what the chase entails, you end the chase. And I just think that this was a fantastic piece.
I agree. My favorite part was my body was the currency that bought me the attention I craved, but on my terms. And that's the thing is on my terms is an important part. I think that often people who have been either neglected or controlled or possibly sexually abused, they want to be able to kind of reclaim their body by having it on their own terms have people pay attention to them sexually, but like have it be their choice explicitly, so where if they're the one chasing rather than giving in to those who pursue them, then they feel safe and in control. So that it was the currency, but it wasn't, you know, someone trying to get it from her. It was her trying to get something from them and offering something in return. And I needed to be in somebody's arms. So it wasn't necessarily the actual sex, even though that was enjoyed too. It was about wanting to be held and, you know, it's that I will sleep with someone to be able to have them hold me. I feel like that's something that a lot of people could connect with. The serotonin induced high, because there is that that high of sex and also of just being held. There's that connection and there's also the adrenaline of the chase. So all of those things can be an addictive feeling. So I really like that this didn't have to deal with substance abuse to be able to talk about addiction, because that natural high is also something that you can feel like you need.
Great comment. And I think that I am up for a read. I'll give this one a read. This is Paul Thomas. This is called Embattled by Paul Thomas 1. Unresolved childhood issues, misconceptions of life, non-desire to socialize, self-induced traumas, body permeated, heart, mind, and spirit, no thought or concern for family, friends, societal peers, enduring the wrath of a godless soul, depression, non-belief in self, feeling rejected, alcohol, drug abuse, or dependence, trust not even in self, years needed for health, bail aboard return, seek and receive, most valuable possessions, higher power of deliverance, and a conscience, abstinence, sobriety, recovery, many professionals, family, friends, and supportive systems, shame and guilt haunting, until cleansing complete, heart, mind, and spirit. End poem.
Great read, Dexter. And I like the way that Paul Thomas built this up, first talking about kind of the root of things, those childhood issues that led to it, about not thinking about the family or friends or anyone when choosing to start this, because it seems like they weren't given support to start with, and then how that led to depression and poor self-esteem. And that sense of rejection leads to, coping mechanisms like alcohol and drugs. And then talking about how to get over that, you have to think about, getting help. And when it says higher power, it makes me to the Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, couldn't think of the word narcotics, because I think they usually talk about, letting a higher power help you there, and it's not specific to one religion, it's just, knowing that that you're allowing a higher power to guide you, and then to recognize that you need professionals, you need family and friends, you need support systems to help you get past that. And part of getting over it is dealing with your shame and your guilt for the things that you did. So I think that's why in the STEP programs there's I can't remember what it's called. It's like remuneration, retribution, something where you have to apologize to everyone, and then you try to make up for the things that you did. And that's an important step, because it gets you past that self-hatred for those things, and that helps you get beyond the addiction. So I thought this went through the stages very well, and you could experience, like, the whole circle. Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought that you nailed it very well on your comment. Heart, mind, and spirit, a distant thing from everybody. You could say
I guess, maybe make the argument here about the higher power being the connectiveness, right, and about being our societal peers. I think that maybe that's what they're getting at. You could say God, but there's many stories and there's many arguments that said that, you know, since we're all made in the form of God or the face of God or the likeness of God, that there's that craving for connectiveness. There's that craving there's just as much as there's that craving for God, there's that craving for, it says no thought of concern, but it comes out in different ways, right? We look for this godless, or if we look for the God because we don't see it in each other, of a godless soul. You could just feel this dark longing and this darkness that exudes through this entire rite. Alcohol dependence, trust not in self. That is such a strong part where you just, this disbelief and this loss in your self trust in your in you and your loss in yourself is such a destructive piece that it's incredible. And so seek and receive most valuable possessions. So in you're looking for your health, your most valuable possessions, because most of the time at that point with an addict, you've lost all your possessions. And this shame and this guilt of haunting, I think that in a lot of addicts, when you look back and you realize how much you've lost, a lot of times it's pawning off or selling maybe important things, maybe things that were passed down, maybe things from your parents or whatever it is, these possessions that, you know, people have pawned off and sold. The way that to reconcile all of this is to realize that the most valuable possessions are the one that you have within, and it's time to cleanse that. So very well done.
And Pam, what were you thinking?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, you and Dexter had such amazing comments. I feel like barely any meat was left on the bone. You really picked it apart. That's, you know, you know.
Sorry, Pam.
No, it's great. I love listening to people when you can tell they're really into a poem, you know, and even tonight's topic, there's been quite a few poems where I've listened to you and Aphasiana and thought, yeah, that is awesome when you can hear somebody really getting into a rite. But I like how he tells us the story, as Aphasiana brought up, the sections, you know, how it starts in childhood with unresolved issues and even, you know, the pressure of the social pressure from peers. And I like how he then brings us into the what you go through, you're dealing with the addiction, the depression, the not believing in yourself. And these three words in a row was a great choice: abstinence, sobriety, recovery. You know, just to have those with nothing else to kind of bring us into that process of recovery. My roommate, he does a ministry for men who are in jail or just getting out of transitioning from jail into a group home and, you know, into life. And a lot of them, you know, obviously deal with addiction and have to go through these kind of programs where you have to like realize that you can't just depend on yourself, that you've got to have, as was mentioned, that support system. So this is an excellent rite and very well done.
Great comment.
Thought that was fantastic comment, Pam. Yeah.
It was. I think we have time for that last poem.
Yeah, I do. I don't know who's out. Maybe Pam is up on the read.
All right. Hell by K.V. Skirkamp. And it goes like this. A personal experience to get my deliverance, not until after going the distance with abuse of substance. Never had a drink till I was 20. None offered it to me. Peer pressure, no logic. Wanted to encounter, to know what it feels like. An inebriated state of condition where you lose your inhibitions, not to feel left out in the midst of those who passed out, occurrences in the high, far out, demons of addiction take steps out. Unaware of my character, addiction of abstinence, its main feature galloped on the track of dependence to a future awaiting to be spent in repentance. Craving for more and more, liquor bottles more at my door than at the store. Nothing else I remember. When the bottle straight up, tolerance levels made even alcoholics sit up, one more quicker than the next. Even the bottle screamed, give it a rest. Addiction is an equation equaling to self-esteem. Increased divalency equates to nullity. Houses of warmth turns into hell, family at a dead end, peace showing its stop sign, rages and rants, daily occurrences, violence and defiance, some same direction, tolerance, grievance at the other end, hindrance to prudence leading to indifference, relationships gone south, friendship losing its clout, engaged with liquor in a boxing bout, getting tipsy every round, you lose respect, relationship, friendships, not even in the vicinity, alone, addicted, and miserable, no one left in the false fantasy, reputation at home, neighborhood and work, now a laughing stock to preach, sympathetic towards the other members, no faults of their humiliate, begging and stealing, no more wrong, left guilt by the wayside when the bottles lay bedside. Years gone by, not aware of days that went by, living in a timeless state till time ends, living on the due date. Extinct to family, extinct to friends, extinct to colleagues, extinct to self. No bigger crime, family in the grind for you to find ways to the deep end. Take the first sip. Keys to hell unlocking its gate, living in hell already the state. Hell learns a lesson by observing your fate. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I loved the rhyming in this. There were a couple places with internal rhyme, like violence and defiance. I really liked the way it said, galloped on the track of dependence to a future awaiting to be spent in repentance. It's kind of like a slant rhyme there. It's so well done. And galloping on the track of dependence, I just love that line. Running towards being dependent on something. It's a fantastic, fantastic line. Dexter, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that the rhyme on this, the flow was perfect. It was almost said like a spoken word poem. I thought Pam did a very good job, and I thought that this captured the poem very well.
Agreed. And Pam, you read it for us. What did you think?
Definitely a powerful and hard-hitting write. Great rhyme and flow, as you mentioned, Defaziana. I like how this takes a look at how the alcoholism starts up. And it becomes part of everyday life and destroys relationships, friendships, everything around you that was good. So just a powerful write and very well done.
I agree. Now, unfortunately, we are out of time. So we are cut off now. But thank you so much for to Pam for calling in. Thank you, Dexter, for such an inspiring contest. To everybody who wrote for us and shared your writing, your poems have been amazing and really fun to read and talk about. I appreciate everyone digging into this deep subject matter. Dex, do you have any final comments?
Stick around for Break On Through and Pam's show here in a little bit, in a half hour. Thank you to everybody, though. Fantastic show tonight.
All right. Thanks, everyone. I'll be there for Break On Through. Good night.